A warning, this episode mentions suicide. This episode also features hope. Sober, sober hope. After a while. It's Depression Mode. I'm John Moe. I'm glad you're here. Is it worse that we don't know exactly how the Omicron variant will shake out? Or would it be worse if we did? Is anxiety better than the dread that would emerge from certainty? I don't know the answer to that question. I know I'm tired. I know I'm scared. I know I'm scared of being tired and tired of being scared. And I'm confused. And I'm angry at people who could be helping but aren't. I know one other thing. The Omicron variant sounds like the name of an especially hacky 1970s thriller movie. Maybe Donald Sutherland is in it. Maybe Faye Dunaway. Get Dennis Hopper to play the bad guy. I'm already making jokes. And I'm doing that because I'm anxious. And making jokes is one of the ways that I cope. I am telling you this. I'm telling you about my anxiety and my coping attempts in the interest of openness and candor and free conversation. The kinds of things that I argue for so persistently on this show and elsewhere. There's a lot we don't know about Omicron. Doesn't stop us from talking about it or worrying about it, mind you. We believe Omicron is more contagious than what has come before it. We know that the vaccine helps you not get it. We know that the booster helps even more. We know that vaccines and boosters are free and plentiful in the United States. So if you've had those, you might get something that feels like a cold or a flu for a week and then be okay. And if you have a health condition that prevents you from getting the vaccine at all, then you are relying on the public health and the responsibility taken on by others. And if you can get vaccinated and don't, if you don't believe in the public health, and if you don't believe science, then you don't, in fact, believe in society. You don't believe in civilization or other people. And you should change that, because that kind of thinking might kill you. You might die of this thing, and very possibly kill others on your way down, as well over 800,000 people have. People have lost jobs and homes. Life has been turned upside down. Everything that has happened is more than we can comprehend. It's more than we can process. As a society, we have evolved quickly. We got airplanes and freeways and the internet and space travel, all of that since like 1904. It's amazing. As a society, we shoot way ahead and we do it fast. As a species, I don't think we really can evolve that fast, though. When you think of how the science of evolution works, it takes a lot longer from a chemical, physiological standpoint. And so we don't really know what to do with the idea of death on the scale that COVID has brought. We can't comprehend it. The organ known as our brain can't quite do it. Our brains physiologically are from before we were able to see the whole world all the time and see things like deaths in that number. The organ that is the brain can't handle it. The brain also knows that we'll soon be at 1 million American deaths from COVID. And even though the brain can learn that fact, knows that it can't really understand that fact, and therefore there's agitation. Our brains are being asked to do way more than they're capable of, is what I'm saying. It's a lot for our brains, for our minds, for our mental health, for our health to handle. And in regard to COVID and mental health, things have been really, really rough, and they're changing to become yet more forms of really, really rough. And I am very, very hopeful. We're going to talk about all the horrible stuff first to get an idea of where we are with mental health and COVID and where we're going. And it's going to be rough. And I promise you, I will get to the hope. Okay? We will contain the enemy of COVID-19 eventually after a long and horrible war. And what's going to happen then is we will face that enemy's ghost in the form of the traumatic stress it will leave behind. We will be at higher risk for mental disorders. Our daily function will be affected. It will be this way for decades, and there's a dire shortage of mental health professionals to help. I'm hopeful. I will get to that. I promise. But let's talk about trauma. It's a little like that show Stranger Things. You know, the Netflix show with the kids who discover portals to alternate dimensions, and then those portals unleash all these monsters into our dimension who try to kill everyone. Spoilers. I watch that show and I think, no one is going to be okay after this. None of these kids are going to be okay when these monsters are defeated. Those kids are going to be in therapy every day for the rest of their lives, if they're lucky, because of trauma. My daughter, who's a fan of the show, really likes to hear that insight from me. She likes to hear me yell that out while she's trying to watch the show. Yeah, I'm kidding. She doesn't like it at all. They're coming back. There's going to be another season, too. Those poor kids. All right, so let me illustrate trauma. When I was 9 years old, my best friend shot me in the chest from point-blank range. Small caveat, it was with a BB gun. Dean and I had this allegedly unloaded BB gun, and we were shooting each other with compressed air. So we'd pump it up and then shoot each other in the chest and feel like this little weird blast of air. We're really smart kids. So then we set it down. We set the BB gun down. We went and did something else for a while, played football or something, and tried it again later. But in the intervening time, my brother, whose BB gun it was, must have been using it, probably to, you know, shoot little plastic army guys in the backyard or something. Anyway, it was loaded. And so we pumped up the gun 7 times, and Dean shot it into my chest. And something was wrong. It hurt. My white Hanes t-shirt showed a trickle of blood that blossomed across the cotton, and there was a hole in the shirt. And something felt very, very wrong. And I was hustled to the car, and then the hospital, and Dean had to live with thinking that he had killed his best friend, and I was thinking, has Dean killed his best friend? X-rays were taken and showed the BB wedged in a section of muscle an inch from my heart. I don't know if I would have died had it entered the heart, but that came to be my belief, that I missed death by an inch. And after that day, I stopped touching BB guns. Fast forward to my early 20s, and my older sister has 4 kids in a short span, all boys. And these are pretty typical boys, fond of roughhousing, sort of almost feral. My sister is a pacifist and does not give her kids toy guns. She doesn't believe in it. They don't know what a gun is. And instead, they find long sticks or celery or carrots and insist that these are their shooters. They're shooters. Boys deprived of guns invent guns. And so I'm the fun uncle. I'm, you know, the closest to their age, and they want to play shooters with their uncle. But when they point a stick at me and say, "This is my shooter," I feel a wave of panic blast through me. I walk briskly away, which, of course, makes the game even more fun for them. So they chase after me, and I say, "Oh, no, put that away," which makes it even more fun. So they do it more. "Don't point that at me ever," I bark at them. And then the game is over, and they cry, and I kind of start to do the same, because what just happened? Those were sticks, but it was the same feeling that would come back whenever any toy gun got pointed anywhere near me. My breath would stop short. I mentally scanned my chest for holes. When I had a son of my own years later, the kid got an awful lot of Legos and no guns. I knew that a stick or a stalk of celery posed no threat to me at all. I knew that rationally, but I still felt it in my body. There was still a physical response and a psychological response, and that's trauma. A stick pointed at me poses no threat, but the trauma stays in the body and is, pardon the gun-based expression, triggered. Well, with COVID, we've all been shot by a BB gun. In 10 years, 20 years, if you see an N95 mask, what are you going to think of? Little piece of fabric that's going to bring you back to all those hundreds of thousands of people inconceivable amount of people dead and society turned on its head, and you may clench up. You may feel it in your neck. You might feel it in your hands. So today, we're going to get ready for the future. Now, here are some things that I'm not. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a social worker. I'm not a therapist. I'm not a clinical researcher. Here are some things that I am. I'm a person who's dealt with trauma, BB gun related, and also a lot worse. I'm a person who's dedicated the last several years to having conversations about mental health, including plenty of talks about trauma, depression, panic, and anxiety, and then telling stories about that to try to open a dialogue and separate fact from myth. And I'm a person who's tried to help himself and his family get through COVID. So, let's unpack the word trauma a little bit. Trauma is an emotional response to a catastrophic event that is too overwhelming for a brain to make sense of. So the brain sets it aside and works on it later. This can be a jolt of an event, a physical assault, a car accident. That's known as acute trauma, not acute trauma. There's nothing cute about it. Isn't the word acute the worst, by the way? You have acute kidney failure. Well, at least it's cute. Chronic trauma is the second type. That's when events get repeated over and over. An abusive situation in the home that involves repeated assaults over a long time. Chronic trauma. Then there's complex trauma. And this is the one that I've been thinking about the most in relation to COVID. Complex trauma is multiple and varied traumatic experiences over a long period of time. Think alcoholic parent. One night it's not knowing where the parent is. Another time it means the parent loses a job and you have to move suddenly. Varied manifestations that put together rot away your sense of safety. Too many things happening to make you ever feel safe and secure and calm. And I think that's where we are together, that complex trauma. That, I think, is what's happening to us. So what are the results of complex trauma that we can pay attention to? Well, problems maintaining healthy relationships, performance issues at work or school. And the thing about the performance issues really stuck with me because think of what's happening in the economy right now. Now, a lot of things are affecting the economy. I understand that. But there are jobs that people want and will take, and there are jobs that people are refusing to take. It's significant that in August, there was a record number of people quitting their jobs. Now, you can point to the problems inherent in a capitalist economy. Of course, I agree with you. But to me, complex trauma is in the mix there. We have been in this prolonged period where things weren't stable, things were broken, and we more or less had to pretend that everything was okay. It's this complex trauma of not being able to count on the fundamentals of life as being there and being safe. When schools shut down, when there are massive layoffs, when there are massive deaths, that sends a signal that we are not in a stable, safe, calm place in the world. Just like with complex trauma. Now, important caveats, trauma is an individual phenomenon. We handle things differently, each of us. Some people use the societal slowdown to just relax or try something new or write operas and start businesses. And I just want to sarcastically say, well, good for them. And, you know, others handled it differently. For instance, you know, watching the Marx Brothers in our sweatpants. How those Marx Brothers got in our sweatpants, we'll never know. Therapists I know, doctors I know, tell me that the response they're seeing, the complaints that they're hearing, the overall reaction to what's been going on is consistent with people responding to trauma. Because let's think back on what's been happening to us. Let's hold up our experiences a little bit and give them a look. Things shut down fast in March of 2020. And right away, one of the first things we did, we got unreasonable about toilet paper. And it's funny, of course, but when you think about it, it was a protective response to our bodies and the most delicate and sensitive parts of our bodies. In March of 2020, my daughter asked me about her 2020 summer camps, if those were still going to happen. I said, of course those are going to happen. This is all going to be over in a week or so, is what I said. She'll tell her therapist about that later on. And so then we lived like that. And it was horrible because it kept stretching out and getting worse. And there was no definition to how long it was going to last. And there still isn't. And we're so tired. And it's been going on for a long time. And we've been isolated more than ever before in our history. And that's hard because we need other people. It's an instinct thing. We reach out to other people to feel safe, to feel connected, to gather social nutrients. And instead, we were being asked to fear other people instead, keep distance from them, which was the right thing to do, a rational thing to do, the safest thing to do. But it's very upsetting. It's still a world that is not safe. It is still a place where the ground beneath our feet is not level. And now we have the vaccine, and we have to fear the fallout of the people who are eligible for it, but haven't taken it. Which, again, not a stable world. The science is there, and the people are not helping. And so this is the environment we've been living in while we try to make sense of all this death and loss and fear. And it's hard, and it's messing us up, and it has messed us up already. And we can say, oh, but, you know, we're getting through it the best we can. And that's true, but we're taking some heavy damage as we do that. And I think it's important to recognize that and to know that it's happening. The CDC has been doing ongoing research, a kind of rolling survey asking, hey, America, how are you doing? And America has basically been answering, not so great, CDC, especially young adults. Like, let's look at depression and what it said in the CDC research. Almost 22% of responders overall now have clinically significant depression symptoms. 37% of people ages 18 to 29. Before COVID, similar survey, that number was not even 5%, 4.9%. How about anxiety? Anxiety was about 27.3% of people most recently saying that they have these symptoms. In young adults, super high, 41% of people saying that they have anxiety symptoms among 18 to 29-year-olds. It was 19% before COVID. Even if no droplet containing the COVID virus ever entered your system, you're likely having psychological effects from this pandemic. In an earlier survey from the CDC, the big complaints were anxiety, depression, traumatic stress, and relapse from substance issues. Groups affected the most, young people, especially young women, people of color, essential workers, frontline workers, and unpaid caregivers. In other words, groups that are less advantaged, less privileged in society already. So, to recap, we've been through traumatic experiences. We're feeling it. We're in rough shape. I think it helps to name it out loud. So then, what comes next? Well, I'll tell you in just a moment. You know what I like? I like when things are easy. Man, easy things are just the best. Because obviously, there are plenty of parts of life already that can be very, very difficult. So bring on the easy. My favorite easy things, I have to admit, are when something seems like it would be difficult, but turns out to be easy. Oh, I love that. Case in point, building your own website and web presence with Squarespace. I did this years ago and found it to be delightfully simple. I can build a site, make changes, redesign everything if I want, all very simple. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. You don't need to be a web guru. You become the guru. Start a completely personalized website with the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint. You can choose from professionally curated layout and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, tailored to your brand or business and optimized
for every device. Make checkout seamless for your customers with simple but powerful payment tools. They accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. Upload video content, organize your video library, and showcase your content on beautiful video pages. You can even sell access to your video library by adding a paywall to your content. So why not get started now? Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/depresh to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. squarespace.com/depresh.
So we've been through some horrible things with COVID, and our mental health is suffering. What comes next? Well, generally, it's a good idea to study history and learn from it. It can't tell us precisely what will happen in the future, but it can tell us what often happens in this scenario. Studying history is more like a weather forecast. We see patterns, we know what those patterns usually result in, and there can be variation or there can be error, but you can tell when some kind of storm is on the way. And folks, the weather forecast is calling for storms. Let's talk about suicide rates. Suicide rates overall in America were actually down a little bit in 2020 for society as a whole. They were up for young people and for people of color. At the same time, suicidal ideation has doubled. That's people thinking about suicide, preoccupied with thoughts of suicide. There's not a direct correlation between ideation and death by suicide, but it's ominous. And it's not the only thing that's ominous. We know that after other epidemics and pandemics, suicide rates go up, especially among the most vulnerable populations. Spanish flu, Ebola, SARS, bird flu. Suicides increase after the pandemic itself has passed. When you look at risk factors, they're blaring. We know substance use is up. We know relapse is up. We know alcohol sales have been way up throughout this entire thing. Economic stress is associated with higher suicide rates. The pandemic has forced many businesses to close or scale back as a result of lockdown measures. Loss of job can mean loss of insurance or navigating an American healthcare system that is so complicated that it hardly even seems feasible to navigate it to those most in need of mental health care. The situation sucks. Social isolation is associated with increased suicidal thoughts, and the main U.S. public health strategy to mitigate the spread of COVID-19 has been social distancing. Participation in religious communities is associated with lower suicide rates, but churches and community centers have been closed a lot, or they feel very different when you go in, contributing to more social isolation. Now, I hope all these yellow and red flags don't turn out to be an increase in suicide rates. I hope to God that suicide rates go down in all groups. But we're not out of the woods. We're still in the woods. When trauma occurs, when something happens that is too big for our brains to handle, the brain doesn't actually give up. The memory comes back as the brain gamely tries to give it another go, tries to process it, and it shows up in some unusual places. I'm not saying everyone will have a trauma disorder. I am saying that we're going through a traumatic situation. And because knowledge is good, it's good to look at what happens to people with trauma disorders. People affected by trauma disorder hyper-experience the experience that they've had. It comes back to them. Some might call it a flashback. We have Amanda Knox coming up on our show in a few weeks. We've already taped the interview. And just a little preview, in our interview, she talks about going to see an Italian film in America in a crowded theater, dark, crowded theater, and hearing certain phrases said in Italian in that environment, that set off a reliving response from when she was in an Italian prison for years, charged with murder, for which she was later exonerated. Amanda ended up having to flee that movie theater to get out of there where they were showing that Italian language film. People have physical responses to traumatic memories. They run out of theaters showing Italian films. They dive for cover when they hear a car engine backfiring because maybe they were a combat veteran. What will happen to you? I don't know. You might be scared of proximity in the future, maybe of intimacy. You might hear the word pandemic and freak out a little. You might have a greater than expected response when you see protective gear. People who've experienced trauma before are at greater risk. There's a study called the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study that says people who've been traumatized previously are more easily set off because the body remembers, because your mind remembers, which means it doesn't go away. So the effect of any kind of traumatic reaction to COVID is going to be greater if there was already trauma in your past. We can expect grief that people couldn't fully undertake in the moment of the actual loss. They couldn't process it because death has been handled differently during the pandemic. Grief that is unsettled after the funeral you attend via Zoom following the death that you had to watch on an iPad. That's unprocessed grief. That might come back later. I think you're going to have issues, my friend, is what I'm saying. If I had to guess, you're going to have some. And it's not your fault. This whole thing has sucked, and you didn't do it. Get vaccinated, though, please, if you can, for crying out loud. So we've had hard, traumatic times. It's likely they're going to affect us in the future. Is this good news for anybody? Well, if you've been spending the last several years becoming a psychiatrist, my friend, you have some economic security coming your way because your schedule will be full. If you've tried to get an appointment with one of these people, you know there is way more demand for their services than there is supply. Therapists, too. Lots of them aren't taking new clients. Some of them tell me that they can't even refer anyone to other therapists they know because everyone they know is booked and no one is taking new clients. So there aren't enough mental health professionals, and a lot of the ones we have are working so much that they're hitting burnout, much like the rest of us. People are being asked to do jobs from home in like a kitchen, maybe while tending to their kids' online education, or they're going into work with masks and rules, and if they work with the public, the knowledge that their lives are a little bit more in danger. Workplace burnout rates have been at record highs. So we're messed up. We're traumatized. The effect of that trauma will be with us for a long time in all sorts of ways we cannot yet predict. But we're not giving up. I'm telling you that we're not giving up. Together, collectively, you and me are not giving up. We have hope, just like I promised, in a moment.
Hi, I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin.
And the three of us host The Flophouse. It's a podcast where we watch a new bad movie and then we talk about it.
Dan, you say it's hosted by the three of us. We've had a lot of great guest co-hosts like Gillian Flynn, Jamel Bowie, John Hodgman, Jessica Williams, Wyatt Cenac, Joe Bob Briggs, Josh Gondelman, Roman Mars.
Yeah, and you said new movies, but what about the time we did Meatballs 2?
Okay. Yeah, sometimes we do older movies and sometimes we have guests, but mostly it's about us talking about like recent bad movies.
And don't forget about the ones where I made you do a role-playing game where you played cartoon dogs.
All right, yeah. But
shouldn't a promo be a really simple explanation about what our show's about? So what's the show about, Dan?
What's it about?
It's about friendship, all right? It's about our friendship and how we love each other.
The Flophouse. It's a podcast mostly about bad movies on Maximum Fun.
Hey, folks, it's me, James Arthur M., host of Minority Corner, your home through these wild times for weekly doses of pop culture, history, news, nerdy stuff, and more through a BIPOC queer and allied lens. That's how you get Joel Schumacher putting nipples on Batman.
Yeah.
I didn't ask, I say this as a gay man, didn't ask for it. I don't need to see Batman's nipples on his suit. Who is this for?
I did a bunch of research. I wanted to just know about the history of black people in Argentina. So not only did they erase black people from their history, they also started to flip and use it as slurs.
We're not done. Like, we're not done with the work that needs to be done. And so stay awake. So join me and some of your new BFFs every Friday here on Maximum Fun to stay informed, empowered, and have some fun. Minority Corner, because together, we're the majority.
We're back. I'm really not trying to bum you out. I'm trying to just get you ready. It's the level of situation that made Greta Thunberg famously say, "I want you to panic." But I don't want you to panic. Recommending panic on an issue like this doesn't seem like good policy to me. Plus, she's talking about climate change, I'm talking about trauma, and she's Swedish and I'm Norwegian, so we always have to disagree anyway. I don't want you to panic. I want you to be ready. I'm going to tell you what I think you should do. To protect you and your family and those close to you and your future, consider trying to get some kind of professional mental health assistance ready to go. As I said before, there might be a scarcity. Maybe you should get working on it to try to get something set up. Ideally, find a therapist who you like. If you don't like the therapist after you meet with them, don't blame therapy itself. People do that all the time. They say, "Well, I tried therapy, but I didn't like it. Didn't work for me. Not my thing." But you probably just didn't click with the therapist you had. It's like eating okra and not liking okra and then swearing off food. There's other food available that isn't okra. I was at an event and someone asked me the best way to handle recurring nightmares and traumatic stress from something that had happened to them. I reminded them that I'm not a doctor or a therapist. And I said, "Look, if the electrical outlets in your house are shooting off sparks and humming, don't try to fix that yourself. You can replace a light bulb. But if there's sparks being emitted, call a trained electrician, someone who's learned the complicated process of fixing it. Get professional help. Your pipes are all bursting? Call a plumber. Got some sore tonsils? Don't operate on yourself. My advice is to find someone who can help you." But these are all coaches, really. You are the player in this scenario. You are the one on the field, on the court. So what can you do to take care of yourself and your world during the long healing from all of this? Well, there are things you can do. There's hope available. First thing, and this is advice from actual experts I've spoken to who are also human beings. First thing, give yourself a break. Give yourself some patience and understanding because it's your first pandemic. Whatever response you have, whatever traumatic response you have, whatever mental health challenge has been put inside of you from this pandemic, the response you have will not be wrong. You will not be weak or dumb or lazy when you feel it. If you still get jumpy when you're watching a crowd scene in a movie a year from now, that's cool. Give yourself time. Give yourself patience. Give yourself a break. If you want to avoid actual crowds at train stations or airports, even if everyone is completely vaccinated, don't force yourself into those crowds. See about traveling during some off-peak times and dates. It's okay. You've been through some mess. If it develops to the point where you can't travel and you need to, well, if your response develops to the point where you can't bring yourself to travel and there's no rational reason not to travel and you need to travel, well, that might be in the realm of a disorder and then you should go get some help. Give yourself kindness, accept kindness from others, extend kindness to others. It's like my friend Jenny Lawson, the writer, says, and I'll paraphrase, if you have a cat or dog, think of how much love and affection and patience you give them. And then give yourself at least as much kindness as you give to an animal. At least that much. Going forward, a lot of us will probably always be nervous about being close to others or shaking hands, which we know now to be gross. I'm not sure shaking hands comes out of this thing in one piece. I don't know if we're going to go back to that. And if we don't, it'll be because of a threat that no longer exists. Trauma makes you repeat the same precautionary actions from back when there was a threat, makes you hold on to them and do them again long after the threat has passed, which this threat will. And in terms of hope that we have for the future, here's the big chunk of hope I'm holding on to. We know the after effects from COVID are coming, and we can talk about them. We have never in the history of our society been more ready and willing to talk about mental health and the challenges and the obstacles and the issues that we're running into. There has never been more openness in the history of our society than there is right now. I've been doing this kind of show for about 5 years, and we've come so many miles even from 5 years ago. We've also never had better technology to connect with each other and share this information and share these open conversations. Yes, there's social media in all of its problems, but there's still social media. There's still technology to connect us with one another. There is technology to connect us for assistance with our mental health. Teletherapy is more available than it's ever been, and a lot more people are able to actually show up to the appointments that they make. So even if we can't connect with each other as much, we can still connect with each other. We can figure out ways to use our technology to get close. Let's be careful about getting close. Apparently, use of the Tinder app has been way, way up, and also the rate of sexually transmitted infections. So be careful out there. I really think people are treating mental health in the same way that they've treated littering and drunk driving and smoking in the past. In our nation's history, we've run into situations where habits that we have been bad, and we've realized it and we've made steps to correct it. The world is a tidier place since people stopped littering as much. Hasn't solved the problem, but it's better. We realize that drunk driving was not cute or fun or unavoidable. Haven't solved the problem, but the mindset has changed. Same thing with smoking. I think that's happening right now with mental health. People are realizing, oh, if we never talk about this, if we shame it, if we act like all these problems that people are having are ugly and gross or a sign of weakness or something to just never, ever mention, then more people are going to die and more people are going to suffer when they shouldn't be suffering, especially over something that was never, ever their fault. I think that change is coming, and I think you're a big part of it by listening to this show. So we can share humanity. We can share information. And when it comes to the effects of COVID on our collective mental health, we can brace for impact. We know the tsunami is coming. It's not a tidal wave. It's not going to crash all at once. It's more of a tsunami. It's a long rolling wave, and we can try to get to higher ground. We can know what our trauma response is. We can spot it in our muscle reactions. We can spot it in our emotional health. We can spot it in one another and try to help one another out. We have knowledge and openness and kindness, and it's going to suck out there, but I like our chances. Next time on Depression Mode, you can't spell Dave Holmes and Carolina Hidalgo without ADHD.
It can get overwhelming. It could be so many things to hold at once. And then, like, when things all start falling down, then it's just like a spiral. And then you're like, I don't know. And the next thing you know, you wake up, it's Tuesday.
Yeah. And Monday's been exhausting, but you maybe didn't do anything other than think.
An honest and pretty funny look at life with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. If people support our show through a small donation, we can keep being here together. If not, we can't. If you donate, you are making Depression Mode happen, and thank you. If you haven't donated, it's easy. You can find a level that works for you. Just go to MaximumFun.org/join. Hey, I wrote a book called The Hilarious World of Depression. It's a memoir. It's about me and mental health and life. There are jokes in it. People tell me that it helped them. It got good reviews. It's available where books are sold. Be sure to hit subscribe on Depression Mode. Do it now. Give us 5 stars. Write reviews. That helps more people find out about our show, which helps our mission, getting those conversations going and continuing. Please know that the Suicide Prevention Lifeline is available 24/7 for free at 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-TALK. The Crisis Text Line, also free, always available. Text HOME to 741-741. Please use our electric mail address, depressionmode@maximumfun.org. Tell us what you think of the show. Tell us what you'd like to hear more of on the show. Send us recipes for fudge. Do what you want. It's up to you. If you're on Facebook, look up our mental health discussion group, Preshies. We're on Twitter and Instagram at DepreshPod. Our Depression Mode newsletter is available on Substack. Search that up. I'm on Twitter at John Moe. Hello, credits listeners. It was December 22nd last week, and that's one of my favorite days of the year because it's the day after the winter solstice. It's the day that is still so gosh darn dark, but it's a little more daylight than before. I've tried to go this entire episode without swearing. I think I'm going to make it. Depression Mode is produced by Gabe Mara. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson. Rhett Miller wrote and performed our theme song, Building Wings.
I'm always falling off of cliffs now, building wings on the way down. I am figuring things out, building wings, building wings, building wings. No one knows the reason, maybe there's no reason, I just keep believing. No one knows the answer, maybe there's no answer, I just keep on dancing.
This is Elizabeth from Monterey, California, reminding you that you don't have to do this alone, and it's okay to ask for help.
Depression Mode is a production of Maximum Fun and Papa Chick. I'm John Moe. Bye now.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.